You must unite what is inside us all.
We are TFR. Truth Frequency Radio.
I wipe my brow and I sweat my rust. I'm breathing in the chemicals. I'm breaking in, shaping up, then checking out on the prison bus. This is it, the apocalypse. Whoa. I'm waking up.
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, once again to the radio show. My name is JD. We are live. This is, of course, Red Pill Reports. It is the 12th day of January, 2015. And yes, ladies and gentlemen, unfortunately, it is a Monday once again. But it's happening to everybody, so just remember that. We're all going through it together. And that's the key here. That's the key here, guys. I want to thank everybody for tuning in to the program once again today. Without all of you, there'd really be no reason for me to be sitting here talking to myself. So without you guys, it'd be pretty pointless. So I'm really, really thankful for all of you guys who are tuning in, especially all of you guys who are going into the chat room. Love seeing you guys in there. I'll do my best to keep an eye on what you guys are saying and see if I can, you know, comment or if you have questions about news articles or anything we're going over. I'm going to do my best to be as interactive with you guys as possible. Obviously, that's kind of the whole point of Red Pill Reports, is to bring you guys awesome guests and awesome information that you're not going to get anyplace else, and to bring that to you guys, the listeners. I'm just kind of a conduit here. I'm the guy that runs the buttons, and that's pretty much it. But so in that vein, I really appreciate you guys in the chat room. I appreciate the email questions that we get. It was a really big weekend in terms of that. Listener response has just picked up huge. So for all of you guys out there sharing the website and getting your friends and family involved, man, cannot thank you guys enough. I hope you guys had a great weekend. I, myself, had an awesome weekend. I got to see some friends that I haven't seen in a while, and I got a couple of good books. My friend Adam came by, and he dropped off Michael Tellinger's Slave Species of the Gods. And I'm telling you, ladies and gentlemen, this thing is going to be in my bathroom for a long time. He may never, ever get it back. And I'm sure he's out there giggling right now, but I'm not kidding. It's going to take me years to go through this big book. And over the weekend, I also got to dig into L.A. Marzulli's newest book, The On the Trail of the Nephilim 2. I got to tell you, ladies and gentlemen, I'm so excited. I probably didn't mention this already, but L.A. Marzulli is going to be on the show at 11 o'clock Central, so about 1 hour from now. And man, this book is so amazing because he really cuts through all the garbage out there. And I'll tell you, with subjects like his, with the elongated skulls or the that's funny, Wolf. With the elongated skulls and the megalithic structures and things like that around the world, there's so much misinformation out there. There seems to be a lot of campaigns of obfuscation going on. Obviously, you know, the Smithsonian has been hiding information about this subject matter for such a long time. When I see such an active campaign that's, you know, working against the truth getting out, it makes me think that people are probably on the right path. And so L.A. Has done such a great job with this book because the pictures in it are absolutely vetted. There's so much garbage on the internet right now. If you were to go to YouTube and look for, you know, giants and Nephilim and stuff like that, I'd say 8 out of the 10 videos are going to have pictures in them that are inaccurate or doctored. And just, you know, whether it's clickbait, people just want to up their YouTube views or whatever, it doesn't really help to get the truth out. So this book that LA's put out, it's about the size of a coffee table book. I mean, we're talking really big, fantastic full-color pictures. And I'm just super-duper interested in this topic anyway. A lot of you guys know that I grew up in St. Louis, and right across the river from St. Louis is the Cahokia Mounds. And the Cahokia Mounds are, you know, part of a civilization that predated Columbus discovering America by a long shot. And so it's always been really interesting to me to try and decide between going out and hunting for Bigfoot around here, or just getting a shovel and going out and digging and hoping I find something that way. But anyway, the book is amazing. L.A. Marzulli will be on the show at 11 o'clock, so that's going to kick off the week for us here at redpillreports.com. It's going to be a big week, though, all throughout the week. Tomorrow, it's going to be a monster show. For those of you guys who have been following the mortgage crisis issue, we are taking it up a notch tomorrow. Both Greg Morse and Scott Bennett will be on the program, and also Susan Lindauer, who is another person similar to Scott Bennett, that she's got all kinds of alphabet letter type connections and things like that, and so she's going to be able to corroborate on an even larger level the research that both Scott Morse and that Scott Bennett and Greg Morse have brought to the table, and hopefully we'll also get a special surprise guest for only a few minutes, but I'm reaching out to a specific listener who's taken it upon herself to take some of this information and run with it, ladies and gentlemen, which is what we're going to basically be asking you guys to do starting, as soon as humanly possible. But with all those details, we're going to go over all of that tomorrow. So enjoy the show today with L.A. Marzulli. It's going to be some, kind of ethereal type stuff. But tomorrow we're going to get down to the brass tacks and be making some headway here, ladies and gentlemen. That's the goal. And big shows all week, actually. Ken Shorkin Jr. will be on the show Wednesday, so we'll be talking about economic stuff. Huge economic developments over the weekend, and we'll get into that when we get into the news segment here today. Deborah Tavares is going to be on the program on Thursday, and we'll round the week off with Gary Milievsky. So all kinds of interesting subject matters that we're going to be talking about, and these are obviously some of the best guests in the industry. So, again, going to be a big week. Appreciate you guys all tuning in right now and also for the rest of the week. So glad that you guys are here. Thank you guys for being in the chat room. Want to also recommend, too, if you go to redpillreports.com, for anybody tuning into the program that isn't a regular listener, there's always going to be a section on the homepage there that will talk about the guest and the show for the day. So you can go into that show section on the homepage there and read all about L.A. Marzulli, check out some of his links where you can go get his books and DVDs, and also a compiling of all of the pertinent mainstream headlines from around the world, kind of talking a little bit about, what's going on and why they're telling us what they're telling us. So it's not just that we're going to read you the news here. We're going to tell you what the news is according to both alternative and mainstream sources, and then also talk about why it might be that they're telling us these things. And again, obviously a huge week for news, huge weekend for news also following that. So let's jump into the national stuff right now, if I can find it on my screen. I want to bring up the pedophile ring thing here really quickly, because I know everybody is so focused on France right now. I don't want anybody to lose focus on the fact that so many of these very elite people in the UK are now all being named in major pedophile lawsuits and things like that. And the news story that's come out this weekend is that there is potential that one of the top Tory MPs there in the UK actually murdered a girl at one of these pedophile orgies. So not good things going on. I'm not going to get too involved with the story, but I do want to just remind everybody that this relates to the Epstein situation here in the United States. And then I want to also make sure people are very aware that Mr. Epstein did have 21 different private phone numbers and email addresses for Bill Clinton. Obviously, Miss Clinton not happy about the connection that's being made in mainstream media, because it's being hidden pretty well by the mainstream. But that's pretty much why I want to talk about it, because that the idea that Hillary didn't know that was going on is absolutely ludicrous. There were several instances that Bill flew down to Epstein's property there. So, not good. And anyway, I just want to remind everybody that pedophile investigation in the UK is still going on. It's bleeding over to the, over the borders of the United States quite a bit. And, perhaps this Paris situation is a convenient distraction, perhaps. I don't know. But it does seem to be doing its job right now. So anyway, just bear that in mind. Clinton possibly, in cahoots with Epstein. And especially as we move forward into the election season with Miss Hillary getting ready to run. I want that in everybody's mind. I want to get Melissa Melton on, too. We'll do a whole show on the evils of the Clintons, because I think that's probably pretty poignant right now. I want to talk about, obviously, what happened in France last week and what happened over the weekend. There was a huge, huge, huge response from the population in France, I think, on Saturday. About 700,000 people marched through the streets of Paris, and about another 1.3 to 1.7 marching on Sunday. Absolutely amazing display. I've never seen that many people. Some of the estimates are actually much, much, much higher than that. But essentially, the entire country of France got together and decided that they were going to march in solidarity because of the shootings that took place last week. I'm still really on the fence about the shootings, about whether or not some of the incidents that we saw actually took place. And there's been a couple of new details that have come out, which also make me question a little bit more what's going on. I did include in the news section today the unedited footage of the police officer shooting that allegedly took place in front of the building there. So if you scroll down through all the news on the show section at redpillreports.com, you'll be able to find that YouTube link. But again, watch it. I've watched it probably 1,000 times now, and you see really clearly that the gentleman, the police officer's head doesn't explode like a watermelon, which makes me wonder if A, he was shot in the back, which again, I think you would see a lot of blood by the end of the video, or B, if the gunman missed him and just shot close enough to him that he knew that when it was fuzzed out on TV that it would look as if that police officer had been gunned down in the streets. And I agree, there's people out in the chat room saying hoax, and I'm really starting to lean that way. And here's a question that I've got. That I don't know if anybody else has really asked, or I don't even know if it's a question, but here's a connection that I'm looking at and wondering what you guys think about there. But could this whole thing have been done by Mossad? And the reason I'm asking that is because a lot of countries around the world recently, over the last couple of months, have started to carry out, we'll call them ceremonial or, and that's not the word I'm looking for, they're doing referendums essentially to grant Palestine statehood. They're not doing it in any kind of like legal, you know, binding fashion. It's all you know, just something that they're doing to it's not ceremonial. It's not the word I'm looking for. I'm sorry, guys. It's Monday. So anyway, they're doing all these referendums essentially to recognize Palestine with statehood. And obviously, Netanyahu and Israel very, very anti that. The United States very anti that. But Scotland has done it recently, Spain has done it recently, and the UK and France have both done it recently. France actually did it just last week. You know, they held a referendum where they essentially said, you know, if we could pass a law, we would essentially move towards allowing Palestine statehood. But what's important about that is that both Britain and France, having done these, you know, ceremonial referendums, both of them sit on the UN Security Council. Okay, so now granted that these referendums aren't binding in any way, but it does show, at least, especially to Israel, that the tide is starting to shift. If you've got two members of the Security Council sitting there saying, you know, maybe we should be thinking about granting these guys statehood, and also we've got the added pressure now of Palestine being accepted by the International Criminal Court, and obviously that, you know, we talked over the last week about What Israel's response to that was, they held back the money from the taxation that they collected, which essentially the people in Palestine would have used to pay their power bills to the Israel-owned power company. But instead of that, you know, velocity of money allowing, you know, them allowing that velocity of money to occur, they did not. So people in Palestine now don't have power. So again, we're seeing the escalation over and over, and we've heard Netanyahu say, you know, that they don't want anybody moving down that road towards allowing Palestine statehood. So I'm wondering if that vote in the French parliament could have had something to do with this. And then you start taking into account the other stupid issues like, you know, the guy's ID being caught and found in the car. Well, that really harkens back to 9/11 in my mind. You know, oh, the guy's passport floated out of the burning building and landed unscathed on the ground. This guy happened to just leave his, you know, his ID in. It doesn't really make a lot of sense if these guys are going to go to all that kind of trouble to do something like that. So anyway, what's been the result of that? Obviously, the Paris march was huge, except for one fairly notable exception. So this march in Paris that took place yesterday included leaders from 40 different nations around the world. 40 different nation leaders got together. And I'm talking about getting together and leading this march arm in arm in solidarity. Even like the leader of the Palestinian Authority and the King of Jordan marching with, Prime Minister of Israel Netanyahu, right? Putting aside differences to actually do something here. Who wasn't there? Anyone from the United States. Holder wasn't there. Biden wasn't there. Obama wasn't there. I mean, talk about embarrassing. And that happened on Sunday. These guys had plenty of opportunity to get on an airplane and fly over there. The fact that Obama didn't show up is ridiculously embarrassing right now. So I guess Obama feeling a little bit, underappreciated at the idea now that the papers in the UK are calling out Obama right now saying, hey, man, why did you – it's on the top of Drudge. Like, this is a big deal. So now Barack Obama feeling the pressure. Apparently, is inviting his allies on the 18th of February to hold a security summit in Washington and try to set up some rules on and guidelines to prevent violent extremism. And this is, of course, according to Eric Holder. He said this on Sunday. So according to Eric Holder, had plenty of opportunity to go to a meeting to address the issue of, you know, bringing together a security summit in Washington, but didn't have time to get on a plane and go show some respect to the slain people over there at Charlie Hebdo in France. I don't like that. I think that shows a really marked lack of character on the side of our elected officials, I guess if we'll call them that. Not that they really, you know, demonstrated a lot of character up until then, but there you go. First Russian pictures now are emerging of the Ukrainian pilot who pro-Russian rebels claim shot down the MH17, obviously killing almost 300 victims on board. There is a picture now that has been released in the news in Moscow, and the Russian Investigative Committee, which is basically the FBI in Russia, is calling Captain Vladislav Voloshin, Captain Voloshin, to take a lie detector test and face formal questioning, asserting that there is now compelling evidence against him, which should be considered by the Dutch-led official probe. This guy is believed to be in his late 20s. He was named by a quote-unquote secret witness who also works at the same same airbase as this pilot. And essentially, the witness, who right now is unnamed and is hiding out in Russia, essentially said this young man took off with his plane loaded with air-to-air missiles and then came back shortly after the Boeing 777 had been blasting out of the sky and didn't have any more missiles on his plane. So, and he's also saying that after landing, that Voloshin, the captain now that, Moscow is alleging is responsible, was muttering to himself that the incoming aircraft, supposedly MH17, was in the wrong place at the wrong time. Okay, so again, more information coming out that potentially the junta that took over the Ukraine at the behest of NATO and the U.S. Did in fact initiate the shooting down of MH17. And, of course, they're going back and forth between Kiev and Moscow about this. But the witness, according to Moscow, has already passed a lie detector test, and now they're asking for Captain Voloshin to come and pass a lie detector test as well. So we'll see what happens with that. I know all of you guys are out there following this investigation. I think that was supposed to be the beginning of World War II, and it just didn't happen. So there you go. The black boxes were found from the Asia QZ8501. Of course, it's that flight that was lost off the coast of Indonesia the other day. So they have found the black boxes. They are supposedly right now, today, actively trying to bring those black boxes to the surface. So we won't know necessarily any kind of results. It'll be interesting to see the timeline that it takes to get to the bottom of these black boxes versus the MH17. Because, you know, they found the black boxes for MH17 right away. They turned them over to Dutch authorities, and Dutch authorities turned them over to the authorities in London. We were supposed to have results in 30 days. I think that was like a bazillion in 30 days ago. And I don't even know, if we'll ever hear any information coming from the black boxes of MH17. Obviously, would do a lot to prove one way or the other what actually happened in that situation. But so interesting to keep an eye on the timeline as we start to recover information from the black boxes from the Air Asia QZ8501. So keeping that in mind as well. We already talked quite a bit about the unity marches in France. It probably needs to be said also that according to French authorities and local CIA authorities, terror cells have been activated all over the world. The sky is definitely going to be falling soon. So bring all of your tomato plants inside, ladies and gentlemen, if you haven't done so already. Probably should already be inside because it's way past frost time. But anyway, that's what's going on there. Let's move on here. Probably also ought to mention the fact that police stopped watching the terror cell that they're blaming for this atrocity in France, if it did actually happen, about 6 months ago, because they were deemed low risk. And of course, now the Delhi attacker's crossbow jihadi wife has escaped and fled to, I believe, Syria or Turkey. They're not really sure right now. But interesting that these people were all on watch for such a long time, and then boom, and they dropped the surveillance 6 months ago. And then after that, this horrible thing happens. Also, another kind of interesting tidbit coming out. The police commissioner, Fredou, who was second in charge of the Charlie Hebdo murder investigation, well, he committed suicide over the weekend, didn't he, in his office with his service revolver. He was actually investigating one of the specific witnesses and one of the witnesses' families. And, you know, obviously the police department's there saying that he was depressed and such and so forth. But sort of an interesting little amendum to the situation that this guy killed himself, you know, a couple of days after the investigation. Is it tied together? I don't know. I just wanted to bring it up because it seems like it's possibly relevant. Somebody asking in the chat room if it was a nail gun. That's a great question. That's a great question. If he shoots himself in the back of the head 9 times with a nail gun, we'll know for sure that it was, in fact, suicide. Okay, we're 11 Spanish anarchists arrested for using secure email. It certainly seems to be the case. In mid-December, 11 Spanish anarchists were arrested by Catalan police in Barcelona, and now it appears that they were detained, at least in part, because they were using an encrypted suite of secure communication tools known as RiseUp.net. And at the moment, 7 of them are still waiting to stand trial. No formal charges have been made public. Early media reports suggested that those charged may have played a role in the destruction of ATMs around the city back in 2012 and 2013, but that report has not been confirmed because the Spanish judge presiding over the case has refused to make the official police report public. However, Judge Gomez Bermudez noted this week that the defendants, quote-unquote, were using emails with extreme security measures such as RiseUp.net, and the defendants were also accused of having a book ladies and gentlemen, called Against Democracy, and also having an internal organizational and bureaucratic structure. So there was a group of people, organized protesters, using encrypted email and encrypted tools from RiseUp.net, and they also, I mean, this is really the clincher, ladies and gentlemen, they had a book, and the title of the book was Against Democracy, which means obviously these people are terrorists, and here we have a pure example of pre-crime detection working in our favor. These angry 11 people clearly needed to be off the streets because they had a book. They probably knew how to read. They might have even been able to type and use computers. I mean, we're talking about a slippery slope direct from hell, ladies and gentlemen. So pre-crime coming to streets near you, already going on in Spain, and probably, you know, I don't know. I think I'm a big fan of Seen and Unseen.is. Both of those platforms are pretty darn encrypted. And I would really hate to think that just because I don't want the NSA paying attention to every single thing that I write and think that I'm some kind of terrorist. But, you know, hey, I'd also probably wear that badge with a little bit of honor. So what are you going to do? Hey, Vladimir Putin did something pretty awesome this weekend. He essentially outlawed the bringing in of GMOs to the country. He signed a law about GMO labeling liability. And even Prime Minister Medvedev said that the government is not planning on poisoning their citizens. So this is a pretty big deal. The bill was actually signed on the last day of 2014. And so new mandatory requirements for labeling of food products that contain GMOs going all the way across Russia. So say what you will about Putin, the fact that he doesn't want to poison his people, that's a pretty big deal, in my opinion. Pretty big deal, in my opinion. I wanted to quickly, let's see here, we got a little bit more economic news. Bad times going on right now in Venezuela. Lines literally for blocks and blocks as people are trying to find simple things like detergent and chicken. Somebody is saying down there that they have visited 6 stores already today looking for detergent, not being able to find it anywhere right now. So a lot of economic people are going to say this is, of course, according because of the fall of oil prices. Some other people out there might say, well, this is potentially more has to do with the fact of implementing socialism in such a wide swath across the country. But the foreign currency right now has obviously been collapsed because of the oil prices, and it's also leading to shortages, shortage of imports from things like toilet paper to car batteries. And so inflation right now, 64% in November in Venezuela. Bad things going on there right now. We're going to have to go to a break in just a couple of seconds, but in the second news segment today, I just want to give you guys some heads up on some other things that are going to be going on. Overstock.com has made an amazing announcement this weekend and a new alternative payment method for employees. I think you guys are going to really like this. Also, there has been some new video evidence that has come out of Northern California, and I do believe, honestly, with all my heart, ladies and gentlemen, indisputable, absolute proof of Bigfoot. And I'm not kidding about that. Absolute, indisputable proof of either Bigfoot or a guy in black pants and a hoodie. But we're going to talk about that when we come back. We're also going to give you guys an update on the SpaceX rocket launch. You can see the picture that Robert put on the front page of RedPillReports.com showing that launch that took place on Saturday. We'll get you guys up to date on what actually happened during the entire launch there. Obviously, they were trying to do some pretty unprecedented things. And are you guys still eating pork? There's a pretty startling new health story coming out. And if you guys eat pork, which I would highly recommend not doing, this is a story you're not going to want to miss. Also, if you have trouble keeping your houseplants alive, there's a really cool new little piece of technology that I think you guys would be interested in. So again, going to a 3-minute break. Commercial time, ladies and gentlemen, happens once an hour here at RedPillReports.com. But we will be right back. Got more headlines to go through. L.A. Marzulli joining us in about a half an hour. Keep it right here. Your daily dose of deprogramming, guys. Be right back.
Chris and Sheree Geo here, founders of Truth Frequency Radio. We just wanted to take a moment to thank all of you for making TFR the biggest and the best independent radio station out there.
When we first entered the alternative media scene in 2009, we were really taken aback by the amount of infighting, backbiting, fear-based reporting, and ego-driven personalities. That's when we knew we had to set ourselves apart and set a new standard in broadcasting. And thus, TFR was conceived as a listener-supported station with no corporate or outside influence and limited commercial interruptions.
You can support our efforts by signing up for a VIP membership at truthfrequencyradio.com/signup or by making a donation at truthfrequencyradio.com/donate.
For less than $4 a month, you can ensure that TFR continues broadcasting for years to come. Real people, real radio.
Wherever you are, make it TFR.
A sudden change in the wind. The day grows dark. As ominous clouds move in and lightning begins to carve arcs in the sky, and you realize you are not prepared.
I am telling you to take cover.
The number of intense storms is increasing exponentially in the U.S. Tornadoes, hurricanes, flooding, and droughts are happening with greater magnitude and frequency. If you are choosing to rely on the government to save you,
and no one's coming to help them,
you could be dead wrong. The first step towards self-reliance in the face of disaster is a visit to My Patriot Supply. There you'll find the absolute best prices on storable foods, non-GMO seeds, emergency water filtration devices, and so much more. All orders over $49 qualify for free shipping in the lower 48. Visit us online or call 866-229-0927. That's 866-229-0927. And speak to one of our preparedness advisors today. Remember, before it's time to survive, it's time to prepare. MyPatriotSupply.com. Nutritious food is real body armor. It builds muscle, burns fat, improves digestion, and feeds the entire body the nutrients it needs. Did you know the U.S. government banned the hemp plant from growing in the United States and classified it as a Schedule I drug to hide it behind the marijuana plant? People have been confused about this plant for over 80 years, and many still don't know what hemp is. So now you know hemp is not marijuana, and marijuana is not hemp. They are different varieties of the same species. Hemp
HempUSA.org wants the world to know these basic facts and to help people understand that hemp protein powder is the best-kept health secret you need to know about. Remember, hemp protein powder contains 53% protein, is gluten-free, anti-inflammatory, non-GMO, and is loaded with nutrients. Call 888-910-4367, 888-910-4367, and see what our powder, seeds, and oil can do for you. Only at HempUSA.org.
White Buffalo with John Phillips.
Tuesday through Thursdays on Truth Frequency Radio.
Welcome back to the broadcast, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you guys for sticking with us through that three-minute break. We are coming back into the news segment right now. I understand, Wolf, the bacon thing. I know we're gonna have to talk about that when we get into health stuff. It's not gonna be as bad as you think it is. There are probably some good reasons not to eat pork on a regular basis. Those of you out there keeping a Levitical diet, I kind of support that. Pork scares the heck out of me, to be honest, but. That's my own editorial. And again, this health story that we're going to talk about with pork coming up doesn't really have to do with that specific aspect. It's more has to do with how they're raising the pork here in the United States. So it might be that you guys can get away with organic bacon. I understand bacon is a big deal, guys. I really do. I really, really do. Okay. Anyway, getting into some national news right now that obviously stems from the situation that took place in Paris. The New York Police Department has now been warned about possible terror attacks by the Islamic State or ISIS after a new video has surfaced over the weekend. This video was posted online, and it encourages its followers to attack police in Canada, Great Britain, France, and the United States. It specifically mentions civilians, police, and military, and the NYPD is taking the threat very seriously. The bulletin tells New York police to watch approaching people, and particularly their hands. There was also a bulletin, I'm not sure if I have it up here on my screen or not, but there was a bulletin that went out to all police departments over the weekend asking them to scrub their social media sites. So they're asking police officers and military personnel to scrub social media, and we're talking about Facebook and Twitter and all kinds of things that might show them either in uniform or give indication as to where they live, things like that. So again, the situation in France, according to the mainstream talking heads, was definitely a real situation, and at least if it wasn't a real situation, they're going to play it like it was. And again, we see this problem reaction solution thing done, and I think that's what we're seeing here. But again, these bulletins going out, New York police departments obviously under the guise now of being more cautious. And I think that's probably a pretty good plan there. Prosecutors right now are recommending charges against General Petraeus. Obviously, kind of an unusual situation here, but apparently, General Petraeus, when he was in charge of the CIA, had a lover named Paula Broadwell, who was an Army Reserve officer, and at the time, she was writing his biography. And the question on the table is whether or not he gave her access to his CIA email account and other highly classified information. The reason that question's on the table is because highly classified documents were, in fact, found on her computer, and the only place that she could have gotten them is from General Petraeus, apparently. So right now the FBI and Justice Department prosecutors are looking at bringing felony charges against Petraeus, obviously saying that he shared this confidential information with a lover while he was director of the CIA. Very unusual, though, because they really vet these guys pretty well, and I would imagine that if they were going to allow him to have somebody that close to him who was also writing a biography about his life, that she would have been vetted every which way from Sunday. I mean, CIA is, going back all the way to the 50s and 60s, these guys don't mess around. So I'm wondering if there's some sub-story here, if Petraeus perhaps has angered somebody at the Justice Department, and perhaps this is a retaliatory measure. Just a question that I have, but let me know what you guys think. Senator Rand Paul has now officially not going to be getting my vote. He introduced the Defend Israel by Defunding Palestinian Foreign Aid Act of 2015. He introduced this bill last Wednesday. Essentially, what he wants to do is defend Israel by defunding Palestinian foreign aid. So I don't necessarily agree with that, but that is apparently Rand Paul's new position on this, how those things, I can imagine if the line in the story is that we are giving aid to Palestine and that aid to Palestine is then somehow being funneled into acquisition of missiles and rockets being used against Israel, yes. But is the real answer to the problem of aid, or is it perhaps getting involved in a way that you can control what's going on over there a little bit better? Maybe having some alliances, doing something for them. I don't know. That's just this Rand Paul man. He's just really bothering me a lot lately. And what comes down to is that it's going to be him and Ted Cruz, wife of which is Heidi Cruz, working for Goldman Sachs as a Nazi gangbangster. So those are your saviors right now, because who are the other options on the table? Well, I got to get to this other story here, but what's his name? I can't think of his name right now. Mitt Romney officially throwing his hat in the ring. So, you've got Mitt Romney, you got Hillary Clinton, who should that's just so frightening to me, because people are going to just vote for him just because she's a woman, just so they can say, oh, I voted for a woman. Even though I doubt really fundamentally, physiologically, that she might actually be a woman. But anyway, that's a separate issue. You got her. You got Jeb Bush. Oh, my gosh. And so are we going into the scariest election ever, in my opinion? Yeah, I think we are. I think that I think we'll see $1 billion be spent between Jeb and Hillary. I think it'll be the biggest show ever on TV. That's what I think is going to happen. Major, 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 major car pileup in Michigan over the weekend. It happened on Friday. There were on-hand people who actually were brave enough to take video. And I'll tell you, if you've never seen a snowy car pileup like the one that happened in Michigan, down at the bottom of the news articles for today, I've included that video as well. It's only about a minute and a half, and it's not graphic or anything, but you can definitely hear the panic in people's voices. And it's probably fairly good to just look at it, because if you're ever in that situation, having seen it once, a lot of people stayed in their cars. Not a good plan. I mean, it's not a good idea to get out and run through traffic as it's coming. But if your car is wrecked and you're in a pileup like that and people are continually coming in behind you, get out and get away. A lot of people didn't do that, and I was really surprised to see that. But anyway, they estimate now about 193 vehicles, including dozens of semis, all piling up on that Interstate 94 in southwest Michigan there. Absolutely unbelievable, and only one person passed away. Lots of injuries. The pileup also included a major fireworks explosion as well, and fuel spills, burning wreckage. It was about as bad a scene as you could possibly see. But anyway, that video is again at redpillreports.com in the show section at the bottom in the featured videos there, just so you guys can see what happened. Just kind of blew my mind when it went down. I want to check my time here. Oh, we're doing real good here. So there was a shooting also over the weekend in Idaho. They found 5 different guns in the car of this Idaho shooting spree suspect. This gentleman, John Lee, he was 29. He has been arrested following a high-speed chase in Washington State after the shootings on Saturday. So police believe that he opened fire at 3 separate locations in the western Idaho city of Moscow. He killed his landlord, his adoptive mother, and a manager at an Arby's that his parents frequented. So I don't know. A guy seems a little mentally unstable to me. He also injured a man from Seattle, but he has been arrested. So not a terrorist spree or anything like that, but definitely something to be aware of. Mentioned the fact that Mitt Romney making a pretty major announcement in front of a group of people to over the weekend. He also actively met with his 2012 campaign staff. So I think you can say pretty definitively now that Mitt Romney will be back in the running. This New York situation, we've been talking about the slowdown of police in New York, and what essentially is going on is the police department in New York is proving exactly how completely worthless they are most of the time in terms of what it is that they do, racketeering and you know, oppressing people. And anyway, the city right now is losing about $10 million a week on parking ticket revenue because of the slowdown, according to budget watchdog estimates. There were only 1,191 parking summonses handed out between the 29th of December and the 4th of January, nearly 93% decrease from the same period last year when 16,000 of those little orange envelopes were put on windshields. And this doesn't include other revenue losses from similar reductions in like moving violations and court summonses during the slowdown, which is now in its third week. But if you do the math on that, you know, we're talking about them losing $10 to $11 million a week. Do the math on that. That means people in the state are being looted for more than $546 million a year just from parking tickets. That's meager considering the city's budget. Oh, my gosh. The city's budget right now, just so you guys know, is $77 billion. So really, you know, half a billion just in parking tickets. That's probably money that they don't really need to be out, you know, looting from people, in my opinion, especially given the fact that a New York police officer working for the Port Authority, some of those guys making more than $300,000 a year. I got to get that money from somewhere. So anyway, maybe this police slowdown is the best thing that's ever happened to New York taxpayers. I think it probably is. And I think hopefully the slowdown will continue until people just decide they don't want these police back on the streets again. That's what I think. Anyways, let's see here. Oh my gosh, somebody just sent me a picture of Hillary literally eating a baby. That can't be real. It's got to be photoshopped. Obama has now proposed, he did this on Thursday, free community college for everyone. Free community college for everyone. So is it going to be free community college? No. He's going to probably force other people to pay for it because that's essentially how the government works. But he proposed to students free 2 years of community college education, which is enough to earn an associate's degree. This, again, he set a video out on Thursday of last week. Did not meet a very warm reception from Republicans. Obviously, all of them readily aware of the fact that, you know, that money's got to come from somewhere. And so they're estimating right now cost the federal government of about $60 billion over the next 10 years. I don't think that this will make it through the House and the Senate. So just saying, I think this one will probably be shot dead. He's tried to do this before, and he actually sought $76 billion over 10 years to try and expand early childhood education. This was the Preschool for All plan, and that didn't go anywhere in Congress either. So I think we'll probably see that transpire here as well. But, you know, it's nice. yeah. People in the chat room are like, we can hear you laughing. That's because people keep sending me these crazy pictures. I love it. I love it. Okay, let's move on into some economic news. Let's figure out what is going on across the planet right now. Gold is way up today, about $10, sitting at $1,226. Oil, honestly, has continued its monumental slide. We are down to $46.44 for a barrel of oil right now. We also have an indication from one of the major princes in the Saudi Arabian area there saying that oil will never, ever again hit $100 a barrel. So take that to the bank or put that in your pipe and smoke it, whatever it is that you guys do out there. The Dow is down just a little bit right now, about 46 points, only about 0.25%. So we'll see kind of which way that wind ends up blowing for the rest of the day here. Cyprus lost its national airline. Actually, the Cyprus National Airline lost its operating license over the weekend and stopped all of its flights after the EU ruled that it had illegally received tens of millions of euros in state aid, according to officials on Friday. So the finance minister and communication ministers both said that an administrator will now be tasked with winding down Cyprus Airways. Cyprus Airways is the country's air transport license authority, said that it revoked the airline's license because it could not ensure flight safety as a result of its financial troubles. The EU Commission ruled that the money-losing Cyprus Airways, which is nearly 94% government-owned, must pay back over 65 million euros out of a 103 million euro state aid package it received back in 2012 through 13. And it says that that gave it an unfair advantage over its competitors. The minister said that the government will cover an estimate of about 6 or 7 million euros. So Cyprus Airways, way underwater, and probably signs of more things to come in Cyprus as the economy there kind of still following suit with everything else that's going on around the world. Lots of people estimating the platinum and palladium prices are going to go way up in the next year. There were quite a few large strikes at mines in South Africa over the last year, but a lot of them have been resolved. And so people are essentially predicting that palladium and platinum are going to be rising dramatically in price. So that might be something you guys want to look into. Belarus is still having a lot of problems. Obviously, they're related to their ruble is related to the Russian ruble. There's a lot of trade that goes on between the two countries right now. And the Belarusian Central Bank increased its benchmark rate for the first time since 2011 and rolled out other emergency measures to stabilize the financial system as the country reels in the aftermath of the crisis in Russia. So now the key refinancing rate was increased by 5 percentage points to 25% effective today, according to a statement published just this weekend. The central bank also devalued the national currency, the ruble, by 7% against the dollar and scrapped the 10% fee imposed on purchases of foreign currency by individuals. Contagion from the Russians' ruble decline of more than 40% last year has spread across the former Soviet Union, putting pressure on currencies from Turkmenistan's manat to the Armenian dram, and Belarus is resorting to higher borrowing costs and dismantling capital controls less than a month after their introduction failed to arrest the ruble's depreciation. So Belarus still reeling from the fall of the ruble that's going on in Russia right now. We're also talking a little bit last week about the snap elections that are going to be happening on the 25th of January in Greece. And the Greek Prime Minister Antonis Samaras is now in this last two-week countdown, obviously. But his lead over Samaras's New Democracy, I'm sorry, he's not leading. He's essentially losing right now in national polls to the Syriza party. And so, again, if the Syriza party wins, the person who is running that party has talked quite a bit about removing austerity, wiping out a bunch of the Greek debt. The Samaras' New Democracy Party obviously has the support of the IMF and the old hand approach there. So interesting to see, again, what's going on in Greece and what that's going to do to the economy. But it is hurting the economy there right now, according to the International Monetary Fund. So, again, keeping an eye on what is going on there. Overstock is doing something pretty cool. I like this. They just now decided over the weekend to offer their employees the option of being paid in Bitcoin. How cool is that? So the online discount retailer announced Friday that it will give the employees an option of being paid in Bitcoin, which is a sign of continuing support for Bitcoin from Overstock. Almost a year ago exactly, the company announced that it would be accepting Bitcoin as a form of payment on its website, and in the release of today's Overstock, said that more than 3 million worth of Bitcoin purchases have been made to date. So very cool. Obviously, allowing employees to receive their salaries in Bitcoin would be a pretty big step forward towards making the currency more mainstream, according to the CEO there at Overstock. So very interesting, starting to get paid in Bitcoin. I'd love to get paid in Bitcoin. I think that is a fantastic idea. And also a little bit of follow-up from Zero Hedge right now. The Lynn Helms, who is the director of the North Dakota Department of Mineral Resources, had to go and explain to the House Appropriations Committee over the weekend that at least half of its shale regions are currently already right now below the break-even point. So we're talking about, you know, the falling prices of oil potentially being a boon for the economy as people find all this, you know, additional money that they can now go out and spend on whatever they want to. Well, I think that that's probably going to happen for the next couple of months. But the problem is that as we see the shale industry start winding down in places like North and South Dakota, Montana and Texas, you know, that's going to really put a pretty big drag on the economy. And I think that in order to buy that cheap gas, kind of have to have a job to begin with. So once those people don't have work, it won't matter how inexpensive gas is. So anyway, so let's talk about the SpaceX rocket. It was successful in reaching its first goal, which was obviously to take cargo up to the International Space Station. However, SpaceX was also attempting to land the Falcon 9 on a solid surface, which is, moving towards reusable rockets is essentially Elon Musk's entire goal with this situation. Why they chose to try and set this rocket down on a floating barge kind of blows my mind, but apparently the rocket came down a little too hard, hit the barge. They did hit the barge, but they were not able to recover the rocket. There was no footage of it because it was at night and it was very foggy, so we haven't been able to actually see anything. Elon Musk did say that it was probably about a 50-50 chance of actually being successful with this particular attempt, so it is back to the drawing board for those kids at SpaceX. But very cool that they actually attempted this. They accomplished, obviously, the goal of getting the Dragon capsule up to the International Space Station, but again, were unsuccessful in recovering the rocket portion of that mission. But looks like they're going to keep at it, so very cool stuff going on there. Unfortunately, they were not successful. But there you go. That's what happened on that one. Indisputable, absolute indisputable evidence of Bigfoot, ladies and gentlemen. I'm not joking when I say that. This is in the news department here, or the news department, in the show link under all the news stuff. You can go find this article, and it does have a video. So essentially, Northern California, there was a gentleman out there who uses drones with a camera on them to do real estate sales, right? And so this guy showed up last week on a Monday or whatever, and he was just going to do a rough run. He was essentially going to send this thing up, fly around the property, showcase kind of everything, and then go home and look at the video and see what angles worked and, you know, what part of the property, what still needs to be cleaned up and things like that. So that's what he did. So it's important to understand first and foremost that the guy, while he is shooting this footage with this aerial drone, can't see what he's looking at. The property is very big. He actually flies the drone up over this big monster mansion and over through the backyard and then down kind of into a ravine type area. And that's where you see this thing. And we'll leave it at that for just a second. So again, this guy's not getting any direct feedback. He doesn't have a screen or anything. He can't stop the video and say, oh my gosh, I'm seeing something, you know, zoom in on that. And at the same time, he is sitting in the driveway, which is probably about an eighth of a mile away from the back of the property where this guy is at. And so if it was a buddy of his, there's really not, unless they've got walkie-talkies or something, it'd be difficult to have direct communication. And anyway, just looking at the video, the guy doesn't want to put his name out, but he's not looking for notoriety here. Very interesting video. I highly recommend people go check this out because you see very clearly this thing kind of comes up and in a small clearing kind of off into the upper right quadrant there. There is a thing. It is completely black. It's black face, everything, and it is walking through the woods upright. You see five or six very clear, pictures. Obviously, it's from up in the air, but obviously, absolutely, indisputable proof of a Bigfoot or a guy in black pants with a black hoodie on. Either one of those has to be on the table, though, ladies and gentlemen. Just saying. I love Bigfoot. I think it's super cool. You guys have problems with your houseplants? Can you not keep them alive? There is a cool new thing out called, it's called Pot. And it's a product made by a company called Parrot, and they announced it at the CES, which is just took place over in Vegas over the weekend. So this pot has got all kinds of sensors in it. It will hold 2 liters of water. It will water your plants automatically. It monitors your plant every 15 minutes. It really kind of takes the gardening out of gardening. You know, it looks at soil moisture, fertilizer level, light, and it will tell you if your plant needs anything and everything. So if you have, if you're not a green thumb person, this might be something that you want to look into. I think that's pretty cool. I'm going to move over. Let me think here. I'm looking at some other news, see if there's anything else. Do you guys know that they make palm-sized quad drones now that you can hold in your hand? I want one. Just saying. There's a cool article about those on the page as well. And I really want one. In the health section, let's talk quickly about the pork because I did mention that for just a second. And what we are talking about right now is American pork. So obviously the fabulous taste of bacon, more popular than ever. People in the chat room will agree with me right there. But if you're eating conventionally produced bacon or other pork products, chances are very high that you are consuming ractopamine, ractopamine, ractopamine. Okay, it is a livestock growth-altering drug. It is so dangerous that it is outlawed in 160 countries around the world, but not in the United States, okay? So this chemical additive has been given the green light by the FDA, and in spite of the fact that it endangers livestock and farm workers as well as consumers, still legal here in the United States. So the EU and Asia have both banned ractopamine. Estimates are that 80% of the hogs produced in the United States and a lesser number of beef cattle are treated with the drug. In fact, since 2013, Smithfield Foods, a former U.S. company and the world's largest producer of pork products, is now working for China and Russia to produce ractopamine-free pork. But, of course, some of Smithfield's remaining U.S. plants still spit out ractopamine-laced product for American consumption. Smithfield refers to these cases as delivering differentiated products to meet specific customer specifications. So what they're saying is they don't care about you because you're not smart enough to recognize that they're going to put poison in your food, and because they don't care about you, you now are the demographic to whom they're going to sell all this stuff to. So again, eat organic stuff if you're going to eat organic stuff. Or if you're going to eat pork, I would not eat commercially farm-raised pork. I try and keep a Levitical diet. I don't know if any of you guys know that out there, but that's just how I roll. I think that pork is just one of those things we're not supposed to be eating, but there you go. So, let's see. A woman has died after getting a flu shot, but not before she got sepsis and then had a heart attack, ladies and gentlemen. So this Wisconsin healthcare worker, Catherine McQuestion, received her flu vaccine as usual, blew it off as if it was a non-event, and later died from the flu. McQuestion's mother said her daughter had received the flu shot as part of her job as a radiology technician while working at St. Catherine's Medical Center in Pleasant Prairie, Wisconsin. And then so she died from that. She got sepsis, had a heart attack, passed away, 26 years old or 29 years old. And then the Kenosha County Health Officer, Cynthia Johnson, said it really wasn't that big of a deal, blew it off as if it was a fluke, and kind of is using this opportunity to urge everyone to go out there and get vaccinated. So she says for the majority of people, they should get vaccinated because this is a very unusual case and typically doesn't happen very often. The concerning thing about this is Johnson seems to be pretty unaware of the fact that on December 3rd, the CDC actually rendered the 2014 vaccine pretty much useless, according to the published reports by Reuters. And in that report, the CDC said they sent an advisory to doctors, noting that one of the components of this year's flu vaccines was only partially protective against the predominant flu virus known as H3N2, which has since mutated, and the current flu shots would take 4 more months to make a new one, even if they were to use newer cell-based technology. So essentially, the vaccine might kill you, and it probably won't do anything protective against the flu. We already know that. You guys listen to the show all the time. Please tell your friends and family not to get flu shots. My goodness. Keep it right here, ladies and gentlemen. We got a 3-minute break. Right back. Wonderful. Okay, ours. Right here, guys.
Haven't you always wanted your very own Truth Frequency Radio bumper sticker? To get the word out about the fastest growing news talk outlet in the independent media? Joe Joseph here for TruthFrequencyRadio.com. KTFRN and LibertyStickers.com have teamed up to give you your very own Truth Frequency Radio bumper sticker for free. Just go to TruthFrequencyRadio.com/stickers today. And don't forget to visit our friends at LibertyStickers.com, home of the world's most dangerous bumper stickers. Their vast selection and quality of stickers are second to none. TruthFrequencyRadio.com, because silence is consent.
We are submersed in a construct that was designed to break us and keep us broken, but it hasn't. It failed. We still go on because we were designed from an eternal template of infinite creativity and not a synthetic house of cards built on pride and false power. Breaking free from the programs and paradigms that hold us down takes courage, endurance, tenacity, and trust. The reason it is so hard is because to be a free and sovereign being, we have to smash every lie, even if it hurts. It is good to be reminded of how resilient, unbreakable, magnificent, and powerful we truly are. And if anything provides a foundation for that, it is the book, Our Universal Journey. go to ouruniversaljourney.com.au.
Judith Baker was once a promising science student who dreamed of finding a cure for cancer. This exposé is an account of how she strayed from a path of mainstream scholarship to a life of espionage in New Orleans with Lee Harvey Oswald. In her narrative, she offers extensive documentation on how she came to be a cancer expert and what led to her involvement in the development of a biological weapon that Oswald was to smuggle into Cuba to eliminate Fidel Castro. Details on what she knew of Kennedy's impending assassination and her belief that Oswald was a deep cover intelligence agent who was framed for an assassination he was actually trying to prevent are also revealed. Me and Lee by Judith Baker, special JFK 50th anniversary signed limited edition. $30 including shipping, limited number of these available. Order your copy today at federaljack.com/store.
This is Truth Frequency Radio.
The Wicked Ones, obviously under heavy Masonic influence.
Welcome back to the broadcast, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you guys so much for sticking with us through that 3-minute break. We're moving into the second hour of our program today. This is, of course, part of your integral daily dose of deprogramming. Wow, my brain just locked up there for a second. It's because I'm so excited about bringing this guest onto the program, ladies and gentlemen. I have to say, first and foremost, for those of you guys who don't know L.A. Marzulli, you are going to be absolutely astounded by the scope of the information that Mr. Marzulli brings to the program. And for those of you guys who don't know, he's essentially Indiana Jones. He is a researcher, a lecturer. He is a world traveler. He delves deeply into the subjects of ufology, the Nephilim, ancient prophetic texts. He's also goes around the world and presents extensive research at conferences and churches and things like that. He also does lots of internet interviews, radio interviews and television interviews and things like that. So it's with a very just absolute overwhelming joy that I welcome Mr. Marzulli onto the program today. L.A., thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule to join us today.
The pleasure is all mine. Thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
Of course, of course. Now, last time you were on the program, I neglected to mention the fact that you also do a radio show on Acceleration Radio. And now, is that at 6 p.m. Pacific every Thursday? Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. I messed that up last time, and I just want to let everybody know how many opportunities there are out to hear your information. And I think that's what I'm so impressed with you, impressed with about you, sir, is that you share your information so willingly. A lot of people, you know, keep this stuff under wraps or want to make a dollar off of it and things like that. And your willingness to come out and just share this stuff and to try and expose the truth is just so heartwarming. And I'm so excited to be, part of expanding your message and getting your word out. But so for those of you out there who are listeners who don't have any idea who L.A. is, and I imagine that's a small demographic because the chat room is alive right now. L.A., would you do us the favor and just kind of give us an overview of all of your research, kind of the fields of research that you're interested in and how you got so actively involved with this investigation, if you would, sir?
I'd love to. I've written 9 books on or about the Nephilim, about ancient prophetic texts, specifically found in the Judeo-Christian Bible, and some apocryphal books like the Book of Enoch, Book of Jasher. We've produced, my business partner and I, Richard Shaw, and myself, have produced 8 full-length DVDs. One of them actually won an award at the EBE. Oops, hold on. Live radio, gotta love it.
Mm-hmm.
At the EVE Film Festival in Phoenix, and we've entered Watchers 8. This is cutting-edge stuff. We finance these DVDs ourselves. We fly all over the world interviewing people, going to sites, handling artifacts. I love what I do. I wake up in the morning, and I'm just excited that I get to do all this stuff. I blog basically 6 days a week, mm-hmm, about a variety of subjects, basically from politics, prophecy, or the supernatural, which pretty much encompasses everything.
Right.
The latest book is On the Trail of the Nephilim 2. It was featured, by the way, in the History Channel's In Search of the Lost Giants. Several weeks back, it was featured, or I did an interview for the Vieira Brothers on their last show, the close of the season for them. Mm-hmm. The Nephilim trilogy is in the process of being optioned for a full-length movie, which we're really excited about. We'll see where all this goes. We're on the trail. What can I tell you?
Well, and I tell you, I've got On the Trail of the Nephilim 2, and it is honestly one of my very favorite books. Not only because it's so chock full of interesting stuff, but you know, these subjects, especially like giants, when you start talking about the giants and the Nephilim and things like that, you can go onto YouTube and you're just presented with an entire slew of doctored images. And I don't know whether or not it's just people out there trying to clickbait you into, upping their YouTube videos or whatever. But, the pictures that you've got in this book are astounding because they are completely vetted. You know, there's pictures on the internet that you see that you obviously are not true, but the things that I see in this book are absolutely astounding. I mean, the original photographs that you present are not something that anybody can really refute, in my opinion, you know?
Well, I appreciate that. You're speaking mostly of two places. One is in Peru, the Museum of Señor Juan Navarro, the Paracas History Museum is what it's called formerly, where we handled elongated skulls. And this is very controversial because it gets into the whole idea of cradle headboarding.
Right.
Are those who believe and insist that all the skulls that we see down there are the result of cradle headboarding. And we do agree in part. Some of the skulls are definitely cradle headboarded. That's when you take the skull of an infant and you bind it using cloth and rope and hard surfaces like planks, and you shape the skull. The question, or begs the question, why get up on a Monday morning and turn to your kid and go, hey, Junior, we're going to make you a cone head?
Yeah.
I mean, what's behind all this? We believe that while some of the skulls, and perhaps many of the skulls, are the result of cradle headboarding, artificial head binding, which results in these shapes, some of them are not. What's interesting, this debate was raging in 1842. And in On the Trail of the Nephilim 2, and I know that now that you've read it, you know where I'm going with this, we posted a lithograph that was done from 1842 of a elongated skull of a fetus still in the womb of a mummy. And this is what they have to say about it. And I'll read this to you. This is a direct quote, which we included in the book, On the Trail of the Nephilim 2. We ourselves have observed the same fact in many mummies of children of tender age who, although they had claws about them, were yet without any vestige or appearance of pressure of the cranium. More still, the same formation of the head, the elongated skull, presents itself in children yet unborn.
Wow.
And of this truth, we have had convincing proof in the sight of a fetus enclosed in the womb of a mummy of a pregnant woman, which we found in a cave 2 lakes from Tarma, in which at this moment is in our collection. What's fascinating about this is it shows that even in 1842, academics were raging about this. There was this controversy. And the reason why people are taken aback by this and have a lot of trouble with this is it points to an outside agency manipulating the genome, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. And this cracks open the door to the supernatural. In my paradigm and in my hypothesis, which is in both books 1 and 2, On the Trail of the Nephilim 1 and 2, we state that it's my belief that the Nephilim tribes, which were in the Levant, in the Promised Land, during the conquest of Canaan, when Joshua and Caleb go into the Promised Land, they see the 12 spies, they see the Nephilim tribes are there. Mm-hmm. They come back, 10 of the spies give a bad report to Israel. Two of the spies, Joshua and Caleb, go, look, we can take them. But the children of Israel go with the bad report. And there's a curse that goes on the children of Israel, because even after all the miracles that the Most High God shows them, as he delivers them out of bondage in Egypt, which, by the way, he waits 400 years. This is all in my book, The Cosmic Chess Match, and it's very involved, and I won't get into it right now because it'll be a major rabbit trail. But all that to say this, that when Joshua and Caleb, a generation later, come in with the children of Israel, and they begin to attack the Nephilim tribes, which are already existing in the Levant, or in the Holy Land, in the Promised Land, the Nephilim tribes begin to flee because they're being annihilated. They know what's going on. And the Nephilim are hybrid beings. The Nephilim are the progeny of the unholy union of the fallen angelic host of heaven and the women of earth. And this unholy union creates this hybrid being known as the Nephilim. This is why the mandate from a holy God goes out telling Joshua and Caleb, wipe them all out. These are an abomination. These entities, these creatures are essentially a hybrid which was never supposed to exist in God's creation. They are, in fact, the progeny of the seed of the fallen one. And way back in Genesis 3, we read, and the four people involved in this statement are the Most High God, the fallen cherub, known as Satan, and Adam and Eve are in the garden. This is after the fall. And the Most High God says, Satan, I'm paraphrasing, Satan, your seed will be at enmity with the seed of the woman. Two seeds. There's a seed war going on. Mm-hmm. And this sets up the entire rest of the Bible, winding up with the seed of the serpent being manifested eventually in the being or the person whom we call the Antichrist, the one who is instead of the Messiah, the false one. That will be a direct, in my opinion, it will be a Nephilim in the classic sense.
Ooh.
So as they're going into the Promised Land, these Nephilim tribes disperse, according to your hypothesis. Some go northward into Europe and eventually work their way over into the Americas, Michigan, Ohio, and settle down. Others come across the Mediterranean Sea into the Atlantic. And Thor Heyerdahl proved this in his book, Ra, which is a follow-up to his best-selling book, Kon-Tiki, which proved that you could take a papyrus vessel, throw a sail on that baby, and without pretty much doing anything, wind up in the Gulf of Mexico.
Okay.
So we believe that they settled there and disseminated from there. Others perhaps went out the Red Sea and came over from that way. The bottom line is, if that's true, then where's the evidence of that? And folks, I got to tell you, we are turning up evidence all over the place. It's everywhere. A lot of it has been obfuscated, but some of it still exists. And getting back to the elongated skulls in Peru, which, by the way, we show amazing examples of in both Volume 1 and Volume 2, these elongated skulls are there. We have had preliminary DNA testing on two of the samples. Both of these were taken out of the country illegally, one by the late Lloyd Pye, the other by a film crew that did testing. I believe they were based in England. Both of these show anomalies in the genome. And I'll read what the geneticist who had access to the samples taken out of the country by Lloyd Pye about 4 years ago now.
Okay.
This is what he has to say. By the way, I have spoken to this geneticist numerous times. We have on phone conversations and email, and he's waiting to get our samples, which we are trying to get out legally, of course, from Peru with all the proper permits and all the providence that we can show. So there's a trail of evidence so we can, once we get the evidence back or the DNA evidence back, we'll be able to say and go on the record and reveal what we find. Now, we don't know what we're going to find yet because we haven't done the testing yet. Mm-hmm. But the preliminary testing that was done through Lloyd Pye sample says this. Whatever the sample labeled 3A has come from, it had mitochondrial DNA with mutations unknown in any human primate or animal known so far. But data is very sketchy, and a lot of sequencing still needs to be done to recover the complete mitochondrial DNA sequence. But a few fragments I was able to sequence from the sample indicate that if these mutations will hold, we are dealing with a new human-like creature very distant from Homo sapiens, Neanderthals, and Denisovans. I am not sure it will even fit into the known evolutionary tree. The question is, if they were so different, they could not interbreed with humans, breeding within their small population, they may have degenerated due to the inbreeding. That would explain the buried children. They were either low or not viable. This is groundbreaking stuff.
Mm.
And once again, it points to an outside agency that is coming in and somehow influencing the genome. We feel... And you only got two choices. Well, you got three. The first choice is what the Ancient Alien crowd constantly promulgates on the History Channel's going into, I think now, sixth or seventh season, Ancient Aliens. And they're saying that they were visited here thousands of years ago by extraterrestrials who messed with the genome. But the biblical account gives us something completely different. And that points, and all of my research points back to the veracity of the biblical account and showing that the biblical narrative actually talks about this messing with the genome. And that, of course, is the fallen angelic host of heaven coming down to earth, having sex with the women, and producing this hybrid being known as the Nephilim.
Hmm. It's just so fascinating, LA. You know, and I've got so many questions. I'm trying to keep us on track because my brain goes in about a million directions. But
mine does too.
You know what I mean? Well, it's just so fascinating because once you start realizing that there's history, that we're not being told about, you have to start asking, you know, who is it that's obfuscating this history? Why is it that they don't want this information out in the public? But I want to talk a little bit more about the elongated skulls and the DNA sequencing that you guys are working on. Was this DNA sequencing taken from like bone fragments or tooth or hair, or where did you guys actually get the, you know, what substance were you guys actually looking at?
Well, we have not taken any DNA samples yet. We did some with a Peruvian archaeologist who still has them in his possession.
Oh, okay.
But they have not. We don't have the permits yet. That's what we're desperately trying to get a hold of to get these samples out of the country. We are working with an archaeologist from Spain. We are working with an archaeologist in the Americas, actually two archaeologists in the Americas, mm-hmm. And of course our Peruvian archaeologist and anthropologist. So we're all over this thing like white on rice.
Right.
And even this week we are trying to get the samples, get permission, get the paperwork to the proper authorities to get the samples out. Once we get the permission, we will fly the team in to Lima. From we'll drive to Paracas, and while in Paracas, that's when we will take the bone fragments, more than likely from the foramen magnum, which is at the base of the skull where the spinal column attaches. It's a hole there. And you can take parts of bone very easily without compromising at all the structural integrity of the skull. So we have permission from Senior Juan, who's the curator of the museum, to do this. In fact, we hope to get he will allow us to do it. We just need the permission from the Minister of Culture to do that. And our anthropologist in Peru is working on that for us. And hopefully, in the not too distant future, perhaps is even as early as 6 weeks, 8 weeks, 10 weeks, whatever, we'll be down in Peru. We're able to do that. I have entered into a formal contractual agreement with the genetic lab that will test the DNA samples here in the States. We will bring out multiple samples and we'll do the testing. So we're excited about that.
Oh, and I'm can't even wait. I mean, I'm one of these people that follows your blog like on a daily basis. So if you're out there, ladies and gentlemen, you want to follow LA's blog, I imagine we'll get information, at least little snippets of information as your developments keep going. But lamarzulli.wordpress.com is where you do your blogging every day. And you can also go to lamarzulli.net to find videos and DVDs and the books and things like that. But LA, I wanted to talk again, still sticking on this elongated skull thing, for people out there who might be completely unfamiliar with this topic. Aside from the genetic differences, are there physical attributes that would differentiate, say, an organically elongated skull versus one that was created from a headboarding type situation, and what would those differences be?
Well, this is where it gets really interesting. Mm-hmm. We have been able to look at many skulls. When I say many, I would say upwards well over 100 now.
Okay.
And we see some markers which we find very interesting. One of the most glaring ones that comes out is the lack of a sagittal suture, which would run from the frontal plate to the plate in the rear called the occipital plate. And this sagittal suture would create two what is known as parietal plates. Now, there is a disease which can close the sagittal suture. We understand that. But we've got skulls of a female, for instance, which Joe Taylor of the Mount Blanco Museum cast for us at our first expedition in 2013. showing only one parietal plate, in other words, a lack of a sagittal suture, okay, or even any vestige of a sagittal suture. There is absolutely no trace of it at all. There are many skulls down there which we have handled that show a lack of sagittal suture. In other words, there's only one parietal plate. Mm-hmm. Is that a smoking gun? No, not yet. That's why the DNA evidence is so important, because as long as the skeptic can go and point to the fact that, well, there's a disease which can close the sagittal suture, well, we understand that. And we've admitted that's okay, that's a possibility. But normally that disease only happens in elderly people, as far as I know, people who are well over 60 and 70 years of age.
Okay.
This is why the female skull that was probably between 18 and 25, according to the dentition that we looked at, that's what we find so interesting about that. But there are other skulls down there that, for instance, even if you elongate a skull artificially, you can't create more brain capacity. A human brain has a range, the size of a brain, which is what we consider normal. Mm-hmm. What we have found out with some of the Paraca skulls is that the cranial capacity is increased 30%.
Wow.
That just can't happen naturally. And it's not the result of hydrocephalia, which creates a beach ball effect. This is why the DNA evidence is so critical and so important, because, look, the preliminary DNA testing so far from two samples that were taken out of the country, one of the Waukee skull, which is hundreds of miles away from Paracas, the other, of course, from the Paracas Museum, show that there are genetic aberrations, that the mitochondrial DNA was not in any, you know, there was nothing linking to it at all. Not Neanderthal, not Homo sapien, not Denisovan. I mean, the geneticist was absolutely floored when he saw this. Once we get the samples, and we have the results back, we will hold a press conference in some city in the United States, fly everybody in, and present the findings to the world for peer review. Archaeologists will write this up. Anthropologists will weigh in. Everyone will have their say who is part of the team, and we'll all do it at the same time. And we'll let everybody know what we find out, and we'll lay the mystery to rest once and for all. The bottom line, though, JD, is this, that if we discover, and we feel confident that we will, the mitochondrial or even the nuclear DNA is aberrant. It does not, there's nothing in the database which even this stuff resembles. Then at that point, we've opened up a major can of worms. Uh-huh. Because which narrative will people embrace? Will they embrace the biblical narrative? Or will they embrace what is being made up on the Ancient Aliens series, that somehow ancient astronauts created all life on this earth, called panspermia? And this is what really is at stake. Who will dominate the conversation? And in my opinion, I obviously believe in the biblical narrative as being the correct one. Those writings are thousands of years old, and it tells us very specifically where and how the Nephilim were created and by whom. And this is why it comes as absolutely no surprise to me that the DNA is showing these aberrations. And I'll tell you something else, that when I first spoke to Brian Forrester, and he told me that to his surprise, some of the carbon-14 dating that was done of the remains showed the Paracas people. And this was done, you know, through archaeologists in Peru, not by Brian, that they were showing that the Paracas people, who where a lot of these, most of the elongated skulls come from, show up in Paracas about 3,500 years ago. Mm-hmm. And Brian was perplexed by that. He assumed that they would be much, much older. And I said, well, I sort of chuckled and says, well, actually, Brian, from my paradigm, this fits perfectly, because 3,500 years ago is when the diaspora or the conquest of Canaan, the promised land, actually happened. So this fits the timeline. Yeah, that's when they would have hopped on the ship and gotten the heck out of Dodge and landed in the New World and colonized the area of Paracas. Look, JD, no one knows where the Paracas people come from. In book two, we show that the Paracas people may have used the wheel. The wheel was invented in the Middle East. Free Colombian cultures, including the Inca, did not know about the wheel, did not use the wheel. And the reason why we think the wheel, the potter's wheel, was used by the Paracas people is because the pottery that we find in Paracas is very thin and balanced perfectly when you spin it on a glass table. Wow. And you can't do this from rolling out clay. Some sort of mechanism had to have been used to turn the pot, turn the bowl. And, of course, a potter's wheel would have come from the Middle East. These people would have had access to that. There's another anomaly that we find with the Paracas people, and I've written about it both in Book 1 and in Book 2, and that, of course, is the incredible textiles that we see with vibrant colors. The weave of colonial Europeans about the same time, let's say 3,000 years ago, was about 150 to 250 threads per square inch. Okay. The Paracas people, their tapestries are 450 to 550 threads per square inch, and they're reversible. Wow. No one knows how the Paracas people show up with this incredible skill, and it's lost. No other culture preceding the Paracas people have these kinds of tapestries.
Can I ask a question about the tapestries? Do you guys find the color purple down there at all?
Yes, we do.
See, now that's huge because I'm sure you know this. A lot of listeners might not, but the purple came from the Phoenician culture. It still does today. It's one of the most expensive. They make it out of mollusks or out of clams or something that comes out of the bay, and it's like,
yes.
I think less than a pound of it in the powder form even today is worth about $25,000, which is why you see purple in the color of royalty. So it's really interesting to me that you would see that color showing up there, because that means that it would have had to existed after the Phoenicians, which would correspond with your 3,500 year, that enigma there.
And what's interesting, of course, is the Phoenicians are a descendant of the Canaanites, and the Canaanites are a Nephilim tribe. So,
right, wow.
Yeah, it all sinks back together. It all points back to the Middle East. And this is the other thing. There are, and I've shown some of this in some of the amazing tapestries. One of the things that we would like to be able to do is do a proper archaeological dig in the Chongos necropolis. Now, Chongos is located very close to Paracas, and Paracas is right on the west coast of Peru, right on the Pacific Ocean. It's a beautiful place. And the Chongos necropolis, which I have been to almost a half a dozen times now, I guess. And
I've got to interrupt you. I'm sorry, LA. We've got to go to a quick 3-minute break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the Chongos necropolis and the tapestries there and what you would like to do with them. Please, everyone, go check out lamarzulli.net and stick with us through this 3-minute break. We got lots more to talk about after this, so keep it right here, guys. Thanks a lot.
Chris and Sheree Geo here, founders of Truth Frequency Radio. We just wanted to take a moment to thank all of you for making TFR the biggest and the best independent radio station out there.
When we first entered the alternative media scene in 2009, we were really taken aback by the amount of infighting, backbiting, fear-based reporting, and ego-driven personalities. That's when we knew we had to set ourselves apart and set a new standard in broadcasting. And thus, TFR was conceived as a listener-supported station with no corporate or outside influence and limited commercial interruptions.
You can support our efforts by signing up for a VIP membership at truthfrequencyradio.com/signup or by making a donation at truthfrequencyradio.com/donate.
For less than $4 a month, you can ensure that TFR continues broadcasting for years to come. Real people, real radio.
Wherever you are, make it TFR.
Doctors don't want you to know about iodine because it allows the body to heal itself quickly and permanently. Iodine Now is a complete powder formulation that will load iodine into the body with vitamin C for the best possible absorption. Iodine Now, available by the case and for protection from radiation, fluoride, chlorine, and bromine.
including all heavy metals. We believe that this is the main element that humans need more than any other at this time. This formulation is infused with our bioactive aerobic rare earth nutrient powder that has a powerful negative charge that attracts positive toxins. Why not buy one product that does the job of 20 and saves you space, time, and money? Has a storage life of 100 years. All for about $18 a month. Call 888-910-4367 or visit hempusa.org. Call 888-910-4367. Bringing back the universal medicine for mankind. Iodine now. Only at hempusa.org.
Here at MyPatriotSupply.com, our customers are number one. Built on a self-sustaining business model, we don't owe our existence to big banks or big business. Instead, the company was built by you, the customer. The success of My Patriot Supply is a testimony to the loyalty and dedication of each and every one of you, to our old-fashioned values and top-rated customer service. These elements alone have made us the number one choice of patriots everywhere. We believe that being prepared should not be a luxury reserved by people with large disposable incomes, which is why we have the products you need at the prices you can afford. We bring you our Patriot Pantry brand of storable food, which features top-of-the-line flavors and carefully packed to store for 25 years. Plus water purification systems, non-GMO heirloom seeds, survival gear, and much, much more. Visit MyPatriotSupply.com or call 866-229-0927. That's 866-229-0927. MyPatriotSupply.com.
We hold these truths to be self-evident, and that all men are created equal.
The Freedom Link.
With Joe Joseph, Monday through Friday, on Truth Frequency Radio.
Welcome back to the broadcast, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you guys for sticking with us through that 3-minute break. This is the final segment with our guest, L.A. Marzulli, today. Hope you guys are enjoying the conversation. I tell you what, this idea that you guys found purple colored in the high weave tapestries there blows my mind, L.A. That is an absolute game changer for me, because it really starts to, you start syncing these faraway places together and the people together. And I just, man, that just blows my mind. So, before the break, we had just started to kind of delve into the discussion about the tapestries, and you were talking about the Chongos Necropolis. So if you want to pick it up right there, Mr. Marzulli, the floor is yours.
Well, thank you, JD. The Chongos Necropolis is incredible. It has been raided by Wakaro's tomb raiders, literally. And we're not talking, you know, Laura Croft tomb raiders. We're talking, right, like these guys that come in the dead of night, and they raid the tombs, and they take the tapestries, any gold and silver artifacts. And we were trying to figure out at first, how was it that the Wakaros, the tomb robbers, were able to find out where the tombs were? As you walk through Chongos, so just to give you a backdrop here, it looks like the Sahara Desert. It gets no rain. So you're walking on sand as far as your eye can see. Behind you is a green belt, because there's an underground river that comes down from the Andes and flows to the sea. And that, you can just throw seeds on the ground and without any irrigation, because underneath your feet is an underground river, the plants grow. So it's a very verdant area, very lush area, and that's where the crops are, this little band where that underground river is. 15 feet away from that looks like the Sahara. And the first time I was there, our guide, our intrepid guide, Brian Forrester, didn't say a word about it. He told us a little bit about what Chongos was. It was Necropolis, but that's it. So I'm walking there, and I look down at my feet, and I notice that, what's all this stuff at my feet? And I bend down, and to my absolute astonishment, I am looking at thousands of broken pieces of pottery shards.
Oh, wow.
And I'm going, and I picked up one, and I went, oh, my gosh, how old is this? Mm-hmm. Turns out it's thousands of years old, at least 2,000 years old, maybe 3,000 years old. A little further on, mummy wrappings. There are fragments of human bone everywhere. As you're walking through Chongos, it can be commonplace to see a skull laying there, bones laying there, a recently dug grave by the Wakaros. Mummy wrappings are everywhere. Mm. It is the most macabre, bizarre place I've ever been to. The last time I was there, we discovered that the way the Wakaros are able to find the tombs is that from the river below, the cultures that use this as a sacred burial ground would take very large, round river rock boulders and bring them up and create a mound of stones. And that's how they know where to dig.
Okay.
I discovered in an area of Chongos which had yet been robbed. In other words, there are no tomb robbers in this place. And I'm not going to on the air tell anybody where this is.
Right.
We discovered, Brian and I discovered this, these very, very large boulders that would have taken several people and perhaps some sort of a sled or a drag to bring these up to the place where they were at. And we believe that this is a tomb which is still intact. The reason why we're trying to get permits, not only to bring the DNA sampling out, but then to do a proper archaeological dig in the Chongos necropolis, is to uncover all this for ourselves in modernity. And we are excited about it. We're hoping to get the permits, and we've got the funding to do it, and we will go down there and we'll tell you what we see.
Man, I can't wait. We're being on pins and needles around here, and obviously as soon as you know, you're welcome to come back on the air and share anything you want to with us. I want to talk a little bit more about the prevalence of the elongated skulls and things like that, because one of the things that we've talked about, and we kind of touch on it every time we have a discussion, is this idea of cradle headboarding and things like that. And so, you know, in following all of this history and some of these subjects, one of the stories that's come up in my research has been the idea of the inhabitants of the French Polynesian Islands back in World War II, when they started seeing, you know, drops from American airplanes were coming over and bringing them food and things like that. And then after World War II, those planes left. And so what we see there is that those cultures create these huge effigies of airplanes every year and essentially worship the airplanes like gods. And so, you know, you can show just with a, you know, an incident like that where it can be, you can see instances of people who look at something that's better or bigger or, you know, something beyond them and try and emulate it in some way, which is obviously what we're talking about when we talk about the cradle headboarding. But I wanted to ask if we see instances of that in North America as well, you know, either headboarding or elongated skulls. Because that, to me, would indicate that if we can say that those elongated skulls or the headboarding, you know, was a result of people trying to pay homage to the elite or to the gods or the Nephilim, that if we could see instances of that in the Americas, then we would know that they came across America at least at one point, or maybe a verbal tradition of them being here. I'm just wondering what you think about that.
Well, yeah, I think that, look, we've got edifices and artifacts here in the Americas, which archaeologists conveniently create a history for. I mean, literally. I mean, they just make this stuff up, and with names like the Hopewell and the Adena. And these, we don't know what these people were called. We only know that, you know, talk the woodland people. I mean, how wonderful that is. The Hopewell. Hopewell was a farmer. You know, Adena. These are all made up names.
Okay.
They don't know what the people who created the mound builders. They don't know what the mound builders actually call themselves. But there are mounds all through the Midwest.
Mm-hmm.
And we know at the turn of the last century, many very large skeletons were taken out by people, men of letters, doctors, lawyers, judges, men of letters, who looked at these mounds and said, my gosh, these aren't Native Americans. I have spoken with one Native American in particular, Chief Joseph Riverwind, who insists that Native Americans did not build the Great Circle Mound that we see in Ohio or any of these other mounds. And Native Americans did not bury their dead this way. In fact, Chief Joseph and other Native American elders that I have spoken to talk about a race of large, red-headed, cannibalistic giants, sometimes with six fingers and double rows of teeth. Now, Ralph Glidden was an archaeologist, quote, very primitive archaeologist, employed by the High Museum. The High Museum was later swallowed up by the Smithsonian at the turn of the last century. And there was a cache of records which went missing from Ralph Glidden. Mm-hmm. It was called the Lost that was found several years ago by the former curator of the Catalina Museum, John Borregina. Catalina is an island about 27 miles outside of Los Angeles. It is part of a chain of islands known as the Channel Islands, which basically connect or go from outside of Santa Barbara down to San Diego. So this chain of islands is there, and Ralph Glidden was employed by the High Museum to conduct primitive archaeological digs at the turn of the last century, specifically from about 1919 to about 1923, I believe, 22, 23, 24, right in that window of time. And I think it was like more like 22, but anyway, I digress. Bottom line is, in most instances, Glidden found Native American. We get that. We understand that. And he showed very little respect to Native Americans, certainly by the museum that he opened up, which was incredibly macabre and bizarre. It's somebody's uncle's thigh bone that he's got nailed up on the wall. and that's, I mean, I'm sort of being a little, making maybe a little glib to some people, but that's not my intentions. But that's what he did. And, of course, I take umbrage in that, and so does many other people. However, this doesn't discount all of his findings. When I was there at the Catalina Museum, after hours in the back room with John Borregina, John took all the Glidden artifacts, which had been recently discovered, in a chest up in the attic of the museum. And everything was cataloged and filed, put away in nice, neat museum boxes. And I started with the pictures. And within an hour and a half to 2 hours, somewhere in that window of time, I found four pictures which I believe are anomalous and show, without any shadow of a doubt, that something is going on here that doesn't fit the typical paradigm that we get from both academia and the archaeological community. We found skulls with elongated skulls, or skeletons with elongated skulls. Very clearly, these skulls are elongated. And I show this in the book, Armor Trail, Volume 2. Mm-hmm. We show one skeleton that has six fingers, and I show these pictures to John, and other people have looked at them, but they're not looking through the same filter that I am. They're not going there looking for elongated skulls, looking for the sixth digit on the finger. We found one skeleton that shows very plainly six fingers on the hand. I mean, it's as plain as day. And we had, there's a bowl by the head in a recently excavated grave. The skeleton is in situ, which means it's been uncovered exactly the way it was interred. And estimated on the size of the bowl, we are looking at a 9-footer. The real smoking gun, and I was just on the In Search of Lost Giants about this, and the Vieira brothers, who hosted the show, had me on. That's my picture. It's my discovery. Even though, with all due respect to Vieira and the History Channel, they made it seem like the Vieiras discovered the photograph. I discovered the photograph. Okay. And I told Jim in an email and sent him a picture of that. I sent him that picture. And that's why the History Channel flew him out to Catalina, so he could discover the picture for himself. The bottom line is, I didn't know Vieira had a production deal at that point. Otherwise, I never would have sent him the picture. Mm. I just thought he was a researcher like myself, and I was being nice. Right. I'll never do that again. I'll never do it again. I've learned the hard way. So they had me on the show because I did the analysis of the photograph. Uh-huh. The analysis was done in a triple-blind study. Now, there's this one knucklehead out there who writes these hit pieces on me, and he goes, you know, somehow this isn't a triple-blind study. I mean, with all due respect to the gentleman, he's being incredibly disingenuous. A triple-blind study is when you give a piece of information to three different researchers or labs or scientists, and you don't tell them about each other, and you have them analyze whatever it is you're giving them, and they get back to you. That's a triple-blind study. A double-blind study is when there's two participants. We had three participants. Actually, it was four in the beginning. The fourth one dropped out, but he did weigh in on it. So we had three people that carried the process, which is a triple-blind study. There was no collusion between any of them until all the results had in, and then I shared it with all of them. All three examined the photographs through different means of photographic analysis. All three researchers, which is a triple-blind study, show that this photograph and the skeleton that is laying in situ in front of Ralph Glidden is just around 9 feet. Actually, it's over 9 feet. We rounded it down to 8.5 feet. We were very conservative. We weren't trying to be, you know, sensationalistic. I could have said well over 9 feet. We rounded it down to 8.5 feet, and that's what we went with. Uh-huh. But all three researchers put it right around 9 feet. The bottom line is, what the heck is that thing doing over there? Why is that there? And already, what's amazing me, the straw man arguments that come from certain sections, and I won't name where they're from, trying to tell us that, oh, well, Gooden staged all this. Well, if Gooden staged all this, why didn't he use it? And the answer to that is, he didn't stage it because he never used it. Right. If he went through all the time and energy and money to stage these photographs, why didn't he use them? And the bottom line is, and this is why it's a straw man argument, you know, I can tell you, well, I saw King Kong on, you know, one of the Samoa Islands. I saw Mighty Joe Young there. And, you know, just because I say so, you have to believe it. And that's what essentially the argument is. They say that Glidden stays these photographs. There's absolutely no proof of that at all. And Glidden never used any of these. And why didn't anyone talk about this until yours truly, L.A. Marzulli, did a triple blind study on the photograph proving that we have a skeleton just around 9 feet tall? So, again, what we see is the veracity of the biblical narrative that these being true, being proven true, at least not conclusively, but at least in part. The evidence points to the fact that giants roamed the land in the Americas. Native traditions from the Paiutes to the Chumash to the Algonquins, Iroquois, Cherokee, Taino tribes all talk about this race of giants that were here before they ever got here.
Uh-huh. Do you think, okay, so then in your research, do you believe that there might have been, you know, benevolent giants and evil giants? And the reason I'm asking that is because the cradle-headboarding thing, I come back to that as being kind of them paying homage, and it would seem like if you were, you know, in a village and just over the hill was a group of red-headed, 30-foot-tall, you know, multi-teeth cannibal type giants, you probably wouldn't be paying homage to them. So it kind of makes me wonder if, you know, if there were groups of people that were this large head type of thing that were benevolent or good for the people, you know, the natives.
No, my gut feeling is, first of all, it wouldn't be 30 feet. After that first initial incursion you read about in Genesis 6, our DNA has changed. We know that. Uh-huh. Our DNA has changed at the Tower of Babel. Between the flood of Noah and the Tower of Babel, our DNA has changed. And so they don't get what they used to get, as Chuck Missler would say, from this commingling of the seeds, as it were.
Okay.
What we see, in all cases, these beings are to be feared. There's a very interesting site in Peru, which I wrote about in Ama Trail 2, called Camacho. It's a very, very interesting site. I had an expedition set up to go down with a forensic anthropologist who, for reasons really unknown, but more than likely, it was too risky for his career.
Okay.
To really delve into, because it goes against the Darwinian paradigm.
Right.
Because what we found was a kill zone where a group of people, most of which had elongated skulls, were killed and buried in a mass grave.
Wow.
And we found this in Peru at a place called Camacho. It's included, all the photographs and my interpretation of that is included in book two of On the Trail. And of course, JD, what's really fascinating about this goes right back to the biblical narrative where these people were hunted down by the children of Israel and wiped out. When I say people, I should call them hybrid beings, hybrid entities who were never supposed to be here. These are, in fact, the soulless ones, I would even go as far to say. So we find evidence of this, again, everywhere in the New World. There is several sites in the Americas which we are working on, as well as artifacts which we are working on, in order to go into, shall we say, with permission, of course, certain mounds and I'm not at liberty to tell you where they are and what we're doing.
Okay.
But all of it's legal. We're working with archaeologists. It's not like we're getting shovels and hopping in some guy's van and driving. That's not what's going on here. I work with archaeologists, you know, accredited archaeologists who do all the paperwork and all the everything that they need to do, and then we go in with the team. And there are several sites in the Americas, and as we begin to explore, all this information will be forthcoming.
And as I said before, we'll be on pins and needles, hoping that you'll come and share it with us. I had a question from the chat room talking about bloodlines and wondering, since you mentioned the Denisovans, am I saying that correctly?
Denisovans,
being potentially Nephilim. Somebody wanted to know if that meant that potentially a lot of the Europeans might carry some of these Nephilim genes. And I'm just wondering what your thoughts are on the preservation of the Nephilim bloodline, if you think that's like an actual thing that's going on, or if we see any evidence of their genes appearing with the giants that we see, actually in existence today. There's a lot of tall people around, and there's, you know, certainly over the last couple hundred years, we've seen black and white pictures of really tall people. I'm just wondering if you think there's a relation there as well.
Well, this is where it gets very, you know, we all can get into a lot of trouble here real fast.
Okay.
Okay? and there's no way to vet any of this unless we have DNA.
Right.
You know, I mean, there really isn't. The geneticist believes that they would have very difficult time in crossbreeding. That's what he believes.
Okay.
But again, you know, this is conjecture. We don't know. That's why it's so. Look, all we know with the Paracas people, they show up and they vanish, and they just vanish, and no one knows why they vanished and what happened to them.
Mm-hmm.
So it's extremely interesting. DNA will tell us a lot. The haplogroup that we find in there may point to Middle East ancestry. I spoke to a shaman down in Nazca, and I said, where do you think the Paracas people came from? Because in his private museum, and this is all in book two, he has many elongated skulls that were there. And he said that he was told by his grandmother, again, oral tradition passed down, shaman to shaman, and he was told that these people with the elongated skulls originated from the Middle East.
Uh-huh.
That's what he was told.
Well,
so
it makes a lot of sense. You were talking earlier about the Ohio, the mounds in Ohio, and I grew up in St. Louis next to Cahokia, so I've done field trips to there.
Sure.
But they have found cuneiform tablets in Ohio that really show even like pre-Hebrew cuneiform, right?
Well, this is a place. This will be in Amit Trail 3. I was just there several months ago with a good friend of mine who's an archaeologist, and this is very controversial. These artifacts, allegedly, they were found, and there's a lot of pushing and pulling on both sides of the aisle. They're fake. They've been proven fake. Other people go not so fast. They don't seem to be fake, and I've read books on it. It's very inconclusive, which is why more study needs to be done. Most of this stuff was dug up at the turn of the last century, and a lot of the artifacts were just carted away. A lot of the large bones that we see were carted away by the Smithsonian. We hear report after report. Now, academics will scoff at that and laugh at that and try to tell us that all this was laid to rest. You know, and this is a racist comment. No, it's not a racist comment. It's actually a racist comment to deny the veracity of the oral tradition of many Native American tribes, which is what they really do.
Yeah.
There's a Native American, Vine DeLorean, who talks about red earth, white lies, and he rails against the archaeologists who try to tell us that everybody came over here at the turn of the last ice age hunting megaflora, you know, and all this kind of nonsense. And he makes some good points. When I spoke to a tenured archaeologist, and this is true, at a major university here in the United States, and I asked the person, I said, look, we read account after account from men with letters, you know, doctors, people who are trained physicians who examine these skeletons, and knowing the femur bone and how a normal femur should be, based on a 30 or a 35-inch femur, put these skeletons at 9, 10, 12 feet tall. What do you say to that? You know what her comeback was? And I'm not making this up, JD.
What's that?
This is what the comeback was. Men of Letters, 100 years ago, did not know how to measure. That's a direct quote. That's all she had for me. That's all she had. Guy didn't know how to measure a disarticulated skeleton.
Oh,
that's unbelievable.
Yeah, that's like 101, what you learn how to do when you become an archaeologist, right? I mean, they issue you the whip, and then they issue you a measuring tape. That's like day one in the class, right?
Well, day one in the class for a medical student is you learn and memorize every bone in the human body.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And that's why it's insulting to believe that a medical doctor less than 100 years ago at the turn of the century, or 100 years ago, over 100 years ago, I should say, the turn of the last century, would not know how to measure a disarticulated skeleton based on a femur bone. Are you kidding me?
And then fail miserably over and over and over and over again as well. You know?
Bingo.
Oh, man, it's just absolutely astounding. I love the scope of your research, L.A., because I really think you do so much to bring so much together. I want to highly recommend, again, that people go to lamarzulli.net. To which you can also go to lamarzulli.wordpress.com to get more of the kind of current what's going on in the world type of motif going on, not necessarily just dealing with your research, but also want you guys to check out Acceleration Radio on Thursday nights at 6 p.m. Is that the site itself, Acceleration Radio LA, or do they need to go to a different website to find your radio?
Well, if you just go to the blog, all the links are on the blog. I post them up every Thursday morning, so you can, you know, just go to the blog and check it out from there.
Perfect. Well, again, LA, we are just about out of time. Is there anything else you'd like to leave our listeners with today before we let you go for the day, sir?
Well, I will. You know, the reason why I'm doing this is because it points back to the veracity of the biblical narrative as being true. So you say, well, you know, what is LA religious? Why is he doing this? I'll tell you why. Because there was a man that was incarnated on this planet 2,000 years ago. The Hebrew name for him, or his Aramaic name, Yeshua. Most of you know him by Jesus. And I'm not talking about cathedrals or churches or candles and monks with funny haircuts and popes and stained glass windows and tapestries and all this other nonsense, all the inventions of men. What I'm talking about is when he came here, he healed everybody of pretty much any disease on the planet. He was able to cast out demons. He was able to stop storms just at a single word by saying, be still. He was, in my opinion, God, and he did incarnate on this planet. If you don't know him, I guarantee you he's not who you think he is. He's amazing. If I had one day to live in the past, I would pick just one day with him. And here's the good news. You can know him, and in knowing him, you can be free from all the little junk that human beings hold on, the bitterness that we carry. Have you lied? Have you cheated? Have you stolen? Have you looked at lust with your neighbor's wife? Have you coveted your neighbor's car? I mean, the list is endless. We could talk about all this junk all day long. Do you have hatred in your heart towards someone? Has someone hurt you and you've never forgiven them? The whole point of his coming was to release us from the prisons that we put into ourselves. And all you have to do is ask.
Wow. I could not have said it better. L.A. Marzulli, thank you so much for joining us
thank
on the Red Door Report.
Take care, man.
You do the same. Thank you, brother. Ladies and gentlemen, I could not say that better, so I'm not even going to try. I hope you guys enjoyed the program today. We'll be back tomorrow with Greg Moore, Scott Bennett, and Susan Lindauer, plus a special guest. So definitely tune in tomorrow. It's going to be a big week. That's a Monday in the books, ladies and gentlemen. You guys take care out there. We will see you tomorrow. Take care, everybody.
Truth Frequency Radio is your number one source for news and information without the hate, hype, and fear. We are proud to bring you cutting-edge programs like The Kev Baker Show,
The Christopher Everard Show,
The Freedom Link with Joe Joseph,
Truth Frequency with Chris and Shuri Geo,
Red Pill Reports
with J.D. Moore,
X-Squared with Brooks Agnew,
Down the Rabbit Hole with Popeye,
Freaky Friday
with The Woo Crew,
Waking Up the Masses
with Robert Bruce,
Phoenix Rising Radio,
and dozens more.
Did you know you can listen from any computer, mobile device, or from any telephone by dialing 832-225-5308.
Or call into your favorite show toll-free at 866-37-TRUTH.
Uncensored talk and news you won't hear in the mainstream media.
24 hours a day.
Truth Frequency Radio. Wherever you are, make it TFR. Real people, real radio.